Hello, Mzanzi. You are listening to Farmers Inside Track, proudly brought to you by Food for Mzanzi. Officially, this is the world's best podcast for 2024, as awarded by WANEFRA, the global organization for the world's press. I am your host, Patricia Temple. Welcome to episode 495. Today, we're unpacking conservation agriculture and how it can be applied to livestock farming. This episode is set to be informative and practical as we welcome Patrick Grakow, who is a pasture scientist at the Agricultural Research Council's Department of Animal Production, Range and Forage Sciences. Patrick Grakow, welcome to Farmers Inside Track. We are very pleased to have you on the podcast. For our listeners, Patrick is a researcher at the Agricultural Research Council in the Department of Animal Production, Range and Forage Sciences. Welcome to Farmers Inside Track, Patrick. Please do share more about yourself and your scope of work.
Thank you, Patricia. My name is Patrick Grakow. I'm a researcher at the ARC under Animal Production, Range and Forage Sciences. I'm a project leader for the Cover Crop Project, which is a national project. I'm responsible for evaluation of forages. By profession, I'm a pasture scientist stroke breeder and also a PhD candidate with the University of UKZN, whereby I'm breeding turf for both human and animal consumption.
Thank you. And as a pasture scientist, we're just very, you know, grateful to have your expertise, especially on today's topic, which is conservation agriculture and how it can be applied to livestock farmers. Because what we do see is there is a lot of information and resources that falls under conservation agriculture, but it's more tailored to crop production. I think it's really good that we're able to speak to you and, you know, have a little bit more on how conservation agriculture can be applied to livestock farmers. What are the key principles of conservation agriculture?
Three key principles of conservation agriculture. One being minimum tillage, meaning the minimum destruction of the soil by either mechanization or by hand. And the second one is cover cropping, whereby we advise farmers to leave their soil covered throughout the year. And lastly, we have crop rotation.
How would you then define conservation agriculture in the context of livestock farming?
Conservation agriculture is the sustainable system that integrates livestock into crop production by improving the soil health. What do I mean by improving soil health? Animals, when they graze the plants or the crops, they stimulate the regrowth, whereby the plants push back the sugars to the soil through the roots. And in that process builds the carbon to the soil, which is an element or a resource that is needed for improving soil health. So also animals improve the production of animals and other crops, because more especially during the off-season or winter, we have shortage of feed. So if we define the conservation agriculture, it will provide a feed for animals, quantity feed for animals during time of need, which is off-season, specifically during winter and early spring month. So that is brief about the definition of conservation agriculture in terms of livestock farming.
You did mention that animals help stimulate regrowth of vegetation. Why would implementing conservation agriculture principles be important for livestock farmers? Do they have a responsibility in implementing these practices?
Yes, Patricia, because this animal and crop, they go hand in glove. So in conservation agriculture, you need livestock and also crop. As I mentioned, the working relationship, that churro crazy, that stimulates the plant and also build out the soil health. And in return, the animal is gaining weight because of the healthy material that it gets from a young plant. As you know, that when the plants get growth, the palatability declines. So by introducing animals to your conservation, then you will graze these plants or crops when they are still at a embryo stage. In that, anyone will get healthy and high palatable high quality forage, while the forage itself gain that regrowth stimulation, whereby the soil also benefit by building up carbon that will be used by the same crop or the coming crop in the near stage. So these three, they need each other. So you can't talk about conservation agriculture leaving animals out, which is what was happening a long time ago. So now it has been introduced, and we're advising farmers to do so, because you need those material to be grazed so that they don't get old and they lose palatability while you want to use machinery, which is contradiction to the conservation agriculture, because machinery will cause compaction to the soil and disadvantage the infiltration of water and aeration. So you need animal factor, which is a key element into conservation agriculture.
Maybe let's speak a little bit more about grazing management and conservation agriculture. What are the best practices that you would recommend as a pasture scientist?
Rotational grazing is one method or system that will help a lot, and also one to have water flow management, because in grazing you cannot use one system. For example, you can't have planted pastures only. You need planted pastures and rangeland and also supplements, so that throughout the year, because our animals consume or feed throughout the year, so we need to make sure that there is enough feed that of high quality for our animals throughout the year. So with rotational grazing, you will be able to achieve that, because you will not overgraze your camps. And then by not overgrazing your camp will be covered, and then there will be no soil erosion, dungas, will prevent that, and also preserve moisture, which is a limited resource in our country as we speak. And the control of weeds also, because once you overgraze, you create a room for invasive species that can come into your kennel, and then they can end up taking over because of the bad pastures that will be caused by continuous grazing and not manage your camp very well. So rotational grazing, it's a one system that can help us into conservation agriculture that can yield the best result.
Recently, in the past few months, especially towards the end of last year, we had a situation where farmers experiencing drought and just very poor vegetation. Is rotational grazing something that can mitigate this, or is it an effect of climate change or just the lower rainfall? Is rotational grazing a way to reduce the impact of droughts?
Yes, Patricia, because drought to us as scientists and the farming community, it's not about the amount of rain that you receive or not receive. A drought is when there's no any vegetation for our livestock in that particular season. And the main cause of this, it's overgrazing. And then overgrazing, the only way to control overgrazing, which leads to drought, is to rotational grazing by giving those crops or forages time to recover. Because if you overgraze, you remove the leaf of the forage, and then there will be no photosynthesis that takes place. So that will, that grass that is palatable, it will disappear. And once it disappears, and then weeds took over or unpalatable species took over, then animals will not gain weight even if they graze those particular species. Then we end up in drought, or our farmers experiencing drought, because their animals will lose weight, and then once they lose weight, all kind of diseases affect them, and eventually they lose value. So when you have grazing, we have rotational grazing, then we'll be able to rest your can, and then the legal amount of rain that you receive, you're able to maintain, because your soil will be covered, then there will be less evaporation of the moisture, less erosion, then your species will grow. And during your off-season or the time that we say drought, your animals, your camp will be having enough vegetation or plant vehicle, then you will be able to graze your animals. Then your stocking rate also plays a major role in that process. And then you will not have a challenge of drought, because the main cause of drought is when we don't pay attention to our stocking rate, which is the number of animals that we put in a camp. Then we overgraze that camp, then we create caches on the camp, the species disappear, the palatable ones, because animals will go for the palatable ones first before they go to the semi-unpalatable. So if they are not controlled, they will pick whatever that they like. Within a long time, they will overgraze it, and then that species will disappear. Then when the species disappear, the camp can look good, but with lower quality species or forages, then you will experience drought.
So the main challenges experienced from drought are not as a result of poor or lower rainfall, but is resulted from overgrazing and, you know, stocking rates that are not suitable for the area of land. Is that correct?
It's correct, because we had this myth that rainfall is the only factor that contributes to drought. It contributes, but remember, we must adjust to the environment. Therefore, we cannot control the amount of rainfall that we receive. So we need to adjust by providing or practicing systems that allow our farmers to survive in those severe conditions that they have, because you cannot move your farm from Limpopo to KZN because KZN there's a winter rainfall. No, you must adjust in the environment that you are. And thank God, God provided us with natural species that can survive those conditions. But what we do, we overgraze them and then they disappear. Then we start experiencing the effect of that and stay because of drought and stuff like that. It's not drought, it's not rainfall only. Indoor rainfall plays a role, but we know that data has shown us that you are in an arid situation. So you need to manage your species based on what you have so that you can overcome or survive those conditions and also make a profit out of your family.
Patrick, so this topic is something that affects them greatly. For communal farmers, what is the starting point then for rotational grazing? In your profession, what are the challenges that you've seen in communal farmers implementing rotational grazing? And what is your advice for applying the practices of conservation agriculture by rotational grazing?
First challenge is the camps. The communal system don't have camps, and then the animals are grazing groups. You find the whole village animals just roaring around. Wolves now, they overgraze those palatable species that I talked about. So the first thing, you know, the intervention that I can advise farmers and listeners, we need to introduce camps into our communal setup. I know rangeland scientists, they can debate with me about that, but that is the way to go, because if you just graze freely as it is the case in communal setup, you are going to end up disappearing because they don't rest. They don't rest to regrow, to produce seed so that they can multiply. And then you will have dungas starting to emerge because of soil erosion events. Species that are not palatable start to take over the lands because you have created a favorable condition because of bare patches and then weeds, because they can survive those rough conditions. Then they will take over. And then in the end, there will be nothing palatable that is there in your camp or in your communal setup. So my advice is that we need to, through the government, Department of Agriculture and Extension Services, to come up with a fencing, which I know they will say, no, they are stealing and stuff like that, but we need to do awareness with our communities, our farming community, to be specific, and also try to address this with chiefs, because this communal setup mostly is in our rural areas whereby we have traditional leaders that are very effective. So we need to work with them so that they have ownership of the camps that we are going to divide. The extension officers must be on board to advise those farmers to say, this time we are grazing Camp A, for example. Then after checking the rate of grazing happened there, you communicate with them, or in 2 weeks' time, we are going to move all our animals to this side, so that we can win this together. Otherwise, if we don't engage or we don't bring in this camp system, the problem will persist, because the more we leave our animals to graze freely, they will eat or they will graze palatable species and then harm them. And in the long run, they will disappear And then after disappearing, then we're left with vegetation or camps that are very poor in quality. Even if you by naked eyes, you can think they are grey. So there's no anybody that shows that, as far as I'm concerned, that there was a successful animal farmer who managed to be successful. There is animals gain weight and stuff like that without camps to stay, because you need to take care of these grasses so that they can give you the good quality feed for your animals. So it can be debate, but where I'm seated now, with the experience that I acquired for more than 10 years, this challenge of communal setup needs everybody to come to party, and then we agree and implement. And the results are there with commercial farmers. They have camps, and then they rotate their animals, and they're doing fine. They don't even experience any sort of animals losing weight or the effect of drought, as we used to say, and also the shortage of forages during winter. There's none of those. So it's doable, but it needs communities and everyone involved to come to the table.
Let's touch a little bit on finances, because we know money is always a factor that determines decisions farmers make. How can conservation agriculture and livestock farming help improve farm profitability? I know you did speak on seeing the condition score of animals is less if, you know, the vegetation is robust and is there, but speak a little bit more on how it can improve farm the profitability of livestock farmers by implementing conservation agriculture principles.
Conservation agriculture will help livestock farmers in a big way, because the first thing, it will reduce their input cost. What do I mean by input cost? The cost of fertilizers, the cost of fuel, the cost of machinery that you need to service, and the cost also of controlling weeds. Because when you practice conservation agriculture, one of the principles, when you apply the three of them, it's the minimum tillage. That means you are no longer turning your soil as it was done annually. You leave your cover on the ground, and by leaving your cover, you will be reducing the effect of erosion, either by wind or by rain, because now your soil is covered. Even if it rains or it's flooding, the raindrop will not cause any erosion. But if you are plowing your land or you are tilling your land, when it rains, your soil will get eroded, and then the topsoil can be removed by floods. New elements that are of good quality, like carbon, can be lost to the atmosphere when you open your soil. So there is a lot of benefits that you get when you practice conservation agriculture. And fertilizer is one of the expensive resources that farmers are experiencing. And for you to achieve potential or production that is required, you need fertilizer. So if you can reduce the cost of fertilizers and also reduce the fuel, you know that diesel prices are fluctuating, and this heavy machinery that you need to plow, then that one can come back to a farmer's pocket. I know practicing conservation agriculture, it will take time for farmers to see the reward, because now we are depending on nature. So you build up your soil through a longer process than when you put fertilizers. Once you put fertilizers to your soil, just know that your soil is sick. So it's like when you are in ICU, that's where now they start giving you a pills and medication. So the moment your soil needs fertilizers, just know that something went wrong. So now with conservation agriculture, we correct those wrongdoings. Now we go back to the way things are, because when you're in this diversity of species, others are legumes, others have got leaves, others are just grasses. They complement each other. They fix nitrogen. They provide micronutrients to the soil. They conserve moisture because there is no any exposure of your soil. So that practice, in 3 to 5 years, you'll start seeing the result. I know farmers want to make money, farming is business, but what I can advise is just take a small cushion, maybe an hectare or so, start practicing, use it to practice CA. You will see the benefits that on my article that I published with you from Mr. Azdankel experience, you will see that in the 9 years that he was practicing cover cropping and no-till, he's starting to reap the result, because most of the money that he was spending in plowing and the fertilizer application is coming back to his pocket. So he just needs consistency and be patient. The first 2 to 3 years, it will be difficult because your soil will be building up those organic matter, those nutrients that are required for a cash crop that is coming, or for your animals that are going to graze. But if you keep, you are consistent, then you will start to see the result. The results are there. And this kind of stories that we published is to encourage farmers to say, this is doable and we must just be patient, and the results are so good.
I really like what you said. Once you put fertilizers to the soil, that's when your soil is sick. I think that's very important to keep in mind. But also, as you mentioned, farming is a practice of patience. And just that step you gave for a farmer to put aside is maybe a few hectares just to see how conservation agriculture will help restore their degraded land. Is, I think that's very valuable information. But let's speak a little bit more about policy changes and incentives. Obviously, CA, as you say, conservation agriculture, is all hands on deck. The farmers need support in implementing it. So what policy changes or incentives are needed to encourage more farmers to adopt CA, you know, from your opinion?
The policies has been there, for example, the CARA Act. So the government, our government is trying very hard to encourage our farmers to go the route of DA. But I'm happy now because the project that I'm leading was funded by the National Department of Agriculture under DA and Land Care. So the results are starting to show, because they have given extension officers in the 7 provinces of South Africa no-till planters, that if a farmer is practicing CA, will be able to use those tractors to plant your cover crops or your cash crop. So that is a positive way of encouraging farmers. And also, this cover crop project is a 3-year project that is funded in a possibility of extending it to 5 years. And what is happening in this project? We have selected 10 farms, 2 in KZN and 2 in Mpumalanga, 2 in Limpopo, 1 in Gauteng, 1 in Northwest, 1 in Free State, and 1 in Eastern Cape. And we are going to support these farmers with everything like seeds, fertilizers, chemical to control the portion that we requested them, that we are going to use as a demonstration for cover cropping, which is the leg for CA. And we'll have open days in those farms, inviting surrounding farms, starting with the workshop to introduce them to what is CA, what is our benefit, workshops, information day. And when we plant, we also invite them. So we want them to see this research on the farm level, because we have realized that we do research isolation from the farmers in our research stations, and then we come and present to them in a form of a PowerPoint or a popular article, which is not convincing. Sometimes they think, oh no, these people are lying, because these figures, how can they get these figures? But if you bring them from the onset to say, come and see, we are planting a neighboring farm, and when the seed germinates or emerge, you call them again, and this is the stage. And when you bring in animals, you call them, and then the project will also give seeds for 100 beneficiaries, which is 140 in per province. Those will attend these workshops, and then we'll give them seeds to go and try in their farms. We'll monitor that by going and checking whether they've planted. So there is a criteria that we develop to say, through national department and provincial and ARC, we are implementers, and I'm the project leader in that project. So a selection criteria to say, a farmer that qualifies to be part of this must practice CA, must have ownership of the land and reserve a 1 hectare for us to do this, and then to allow also to us to hold information days. And those processes and were completed, we got the 10 sites that we required. So government is coming on board. And in addition to that, we have also 5 research stations, because we are a research institution. We cannot link research outside. So now we're doing applied research on the farms and the basic research on the research stations. We are working with Polish Agricultural College, Titara Research Station, MLO next to that station, University of Limpopo, and then our campus here at Irene and Rodeplaat in Pretoria. So this approach is yielding results. It's the second year of the project, and we are funded by government. As I said, we have also appointed 6 interns, 4 master students in different disciplines, soil science, agronomy, pasture, animal, because you need all this expertise in conservation agriculture. And we have 2 PhD students. And we are also going to support government officials who want to further their studies. So government is really showing interest in supporting initiatives and incentives to farmers and other researchers so that we go the route of CA. And where I'm seated now, I'm convinced, and I think this is the right way, because we have a low rainfall in our country, we have a shortage of carbon in our soil, and that this global warming situation that we are facing, the loss of animal weight during winter and early spring. So for us to address all these challenges that I mentioned, CA is a comprehensive way of achieving that, because here in how you bring a soil scientist, you bring a pasture scientist, animal scientist, economist, and the agrometeorologist, because now even weather plays a major role. So it's a collective way of bringing these resources together to achieve one objective that all of us are going to benefit. So I think government is on the right track. With your help also as media in agriculture, to give us platform like this, where we publish our popular articles, our work, and also have these interviews so that we can spread the message. And then I'm telling you, while if you convince one farmer, it's an achievement, because he or she will convince one, the other one convince the other one. Then in 5 to 10 years, because this is a long walk, it's not something that can happen overnight. And I believe what people have Mr. Duncan doing it, and there are a few of our beneficiaries that are doing well, and I will share their experience through publication. Then the other ones come and join, then we will be on the right track.
Thank you so much to Patrick Grakow, who is a pasture scientist at the Agricultural Research Council. For more information on this topic, you can visit www.foodformzanzi.co.za. And that brings us to the end of this episode. Remember to subscribe to our podcast on your favorite platform. From me, Patricia Tembo, our technical producer, Megan van der Vind, and the rest of hashtag team FoodformZanzi, thank you for listening.
Africa's dopest gathering for young farmers is back. Don't miss your chance to join the who's who's of agriculture, from top-tier experts to game-changing farmers, at the Mzansi Young Farmers Indaba on 1 and 2 April 2025 in Pretoria. Early bird tickets are now available, so head to farmingindaba.com to get your full access pass for a discounted price. That's farmingindaba.com for early bird access to a full access pass. You don't want to miss out.